You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I am your host, Tracy Ross. Kate Lochte has joined me in the studio. And on the phone, we're speaking to Nancy Grant of Louisville. She's a freelance writer, and the first installment of her series On the Grid for Kentucky Living Magazine talks about how regulations keep the complex electric utility system running smoothly. Well, that's quite a mouthful, Nancy. Thank you very much for being on Sounds Good today.
Good morning. Yes, I write the regular monthly column in the On the Grid section of Kentucky Living. My column is called The Future of Electricity. This past month, I looked to the past to talk about how the rules and regulations got started that govern the electric utility system.
Nancy, it's a fascinating article, and I'm so glad you could be with us today. Let me tell our listeners a little bit more about you. You are a member of the American Society of Journalists and Authors. You've been a freelancer since 1986, and energy technology is really where your focus is. This series, this first installment that we're talking about, the reasons for the rules, outlines how our electric service came to be what it is, and it wasn't always what it is. The first companies providing electricity to households competed with each other. Who got the best service? Who was left out, and what did it look like?
Well, what happened was the early electric utilities were, generally speaking, operated to make a profit. This new service was in great demand, and the easiest place to make money on providing electric service is in densely populated areas, cities, and larger towns. So they competed with each other to sign up the most customers. While that was going on in the big cities and towns, people in the rural parts of America were doing without. Their lives were governed by candles, kerosene lanterns, coal oil lamps, because the for-profit electric utilities didn't think they could make any money if they ran their lines out into the countryside where there were only a few customers per mile. But back in the city, it was rough and tumble and a scramble. Sometimes competing electric companies within one town would set up poles and lines crisscrossing each other. And those, it made a mess. It really did. And some of those early companies went broke. They took over, the last company standing took over all the power lines in that town and ran it to earn a profit for their investors.
So the customers really didn't have much say in fees, I suppose. And plus the fact that the rural customers had no recourse. What did Kentucky
do? Well, the rural customers didn't exist yet.
There you go.
Didn't come along until the middle of the 1930s when President Roosevelt and members of Congress set up a new thing, the Rural Electrification Administration. And that set up the opportunity for people in rural communities to band together and create their own electric companies on a cooperative business model. They wouldn't operate for a profit. They would just provide the service. And so during the 1930s, people in rural parts of America began to build their own electricity networks. Those companies were independent of the investor-owned companies, and the investor-owned companies weren't real sure what to do with the new guys, okay? And so sometimes where their service areas were close together, the investor-owned companies would put up another set of lines out of spite, and they became known as spite lines, because they were kind of elbowing around, seeing how far they might want to extend their territory. And that is one of the first rules, sets of regulations that came into the electric utility seen was when it was agreed that everybody should have their own service territory and not overlap, because it would be so expensive to have poles and wires crisscrossing each other. But those territories did not become official until 1972.
No kidding.
Yeah. Each electric utility in the state of Kentucky was asked to provide a map and to say what their geographic boundaries were. And that became state law in 1972. Now, today, things have changed a lot. Back in 1972, there was still more of a clearly defined difference when you were in town and when you were out in farmland. Well, 40 years to the future now, that's different. We have suburbs outside the town limits. We have industry on what used to be farmland. And so today, it can happen that a subdivision that's just been built in the last, say, 10 years, half of that subdivision might be served by an investor-owned utility associated with the nearest big city, and the other half of the suburban development might be served by the rural electric co-op in that area. And so because those service territory borders are governed by law, and nobody wants to change those laws right now, it's smarter to let each utility serve the same geographic area.
So in total, the cooperatives and any other providers are regulated by the Public Service Commission that came about the same time in Kentucky as the Rural Electrification Administration was underway. Is that correct?
Yes, that is true. That was in the middle of the 1930s. And the reason we have public service commissions in the various states is because electricity is an essential service. And what happens is you end up with what is known as a natural monopoly. And we talked about it was silly to have two different companies serving the same geographic area. It's too expensive to put those poles up, to string the wires, to maintain them. It's better for one company to operate in this section and a different company to operate in another part. But there's a temptation there. If you're the only company providing this service, sure, you can keep your network nice and neat and everything, but you might want to raise your prices, and that would hurt the electric consumer. So these public service commissions look at the financial records of the company, whether it's an investor-owned or a municipal power company or an electric co-op, and they say, here's the rules. You can charge for these things and these things, but you can't just make up numbers. You have to make it public, and there has to be an agreed rate schedule. And that is to protect the consumer. Mm-hmm. So those are good rules for us.
Now, Nancy, you're going to the 37th Governor's Conference on Energy and the Environment, I guess, next week. Tell me what topics you predict will make the most news out of that conference.
Well, this year, the conference takes place in Lexington on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. Governor Beshear will be the keynote speaker at the opening luncheon. And what everyone that I talk to in state government and elsewhere is concerned about is with President Obama's new climate change agenda that he announced in a June speech. The key features of that are proposed rules and regulations about climate change and their impact on Kentucky. And if we have a minute, I'll talk about that.
I'd like to learn more about it, yes.
All right. Well, Kentucky is a manufacturing state. We employ more than 200,000 people in manufacturing in our state. And our state is a very energy intensive because we make so many things here. Sure, we make cars, and we've got aluminum smelters, but we make all kinds of other things, dishwashers and refrigerators. There's a lot of industry in Kentucky. The reason we have so much industry here, there are several reasons, but one of the key ones is that our electricity rates are very affordable. They're affordable because Kentucky historically has used coal to generate electricity. About 90%, 92% of Kentucky's electricity is based on coal, and that keeps the price of electricity very low in our state. And that attracts manufacturers who need a lot of electricity for their business. So in the president's most recent proposals, he is talking about new regulations governing coal to reduce carbon dioxide emissions, which are part of the six things that cause the greenhouse effect in the atmosphere of the Earth. So this conference next week, I expect to hear a lot of people talking about what the effect of the president's proposed regulations would have on how the electric utilities within our state and our neighbors as well, but keyed in on Kentucky, how that will affect the way coal can or cannot be used in our state. And that, in turn, will affect the price of electricity, and that will affect individual consumers like you and me, but it will also affect the businesses that make things here in Kentucky and employ those 200,000-plus people. So I think that's going to be a big focus next week. The other thing I expect them to talk about is going to be land conservation and preservation, energy efficiency, and the usual grab bag of topics that cross between the production of energy and the protection of our environment. It's one of the things that makes this conference and the way the state government is set up. Kentucky was one of the very first states to combine their cabinet departments of energy and environment under one roof. And that's very important because it means that the people, the engineers, are talking with the environmentalists and they're understanding each other's problems and viewpoints. And this is a very big thing that they talk to each other. And this conference is especially fun for me because in addition to all the speeches and all that, there's a trade show area and there's some social time where you can have a conversation with someone who works at an electric utility that generates electricity. And the other person in that conversation is a member of an environmental group, somebody like the Natural Resources Defense Council or somebody like the Sierra Club. Got all those people in the same room together.
Hopefully it will turn out well for the rest of us to have that much thought going into issues that are pressing for today. Hey, Nancy, I really appreciate you being with us today, and I look forward to our next conversation. I think you'll be speaking about federal rules and regulations governing electric utility operations next. So thank you again, and we'll hear from you next month.
Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Nancy Grant is a freelance writer in Louisville, and her articles are in Kentucky Living Magazine, which is published by the Kentucky Association of Electric Cooperatives, based in Louisville.